All right, this is Daily Power Parsha, and today is November 27th, 2020. Who would have thought? Anyway, I know I always say that. I'm not sure what else we would have thought, but nonetheless. Okay, so today we're going to finish up, hopefully, the Torah portion of Vayetze. I'm going to share my screen with you, and we are going to jump right in. So as we left it off last time, so Jacob was staying by his uncle. He fell in love with Rachel, wanted to marry her, ended up marrying Leah, married Rachel as well, which we discussed and explored why he married two sisters and how he could do that. There were also two maidservants involved. We read about the birth of 12 children to Jacob. It's a lot of kids. 11 boys and a girl, the girl being Dinah. And at this point, oh, and we had just read about the birth of Yosef, the firstborn of his beloved Rachel. And what does Yaakov say as soon as Joseph, as soon as Yosef is born? He says to Lavan, his father-in-law slash uncle, he says, "Let me go. I'm out of here. It's been real. It's been fun. Maybe, I don't know if he said that. It's definitely been an experience. It's time to go." What does Lavan say back to him? "No, I don't want you to go. In fact," he says, "I see that I've been blessed because of you. And since I'm blessed because of you, I'd like for you to stay here. I want the blessings to keep on going. I'm very successful with you as a shepherd. So stay." So the narrative continues right here. Chapter 30 of Genesis, verse 28. Let's jump right in. So this is Laban, the father-in-law, uncle, still speaking. Then he said, "Specify your wages for me and I will give them." In other words, name your price. I really want you to be here. I really want you to stay. Name your price. So Jacob said to him, "You know how I have worked for you and how your livestock was with me. For the little that you had before me has increased in multitude." In other words, what he's saying is, you gave me only a few animals and I have protected them and made sure that they're multiplying. Look, here's the deal. Here's the first disclaimer. I'm not a shepherd, but from the very little wisdom of shepherding that I know, I imagine that the job number one is to protect the sheep and make sure they're healthy. Job number two is to have more sheep, to have sheep, have more sheep. So, and or other animals. So what he says is, verse 30 over here, he says, "The little that you had before me has increased the multitude," which means that I've earned a profit for you. "And the Lord bless you upon my arrival. But now, when will I too provide something for my household?" Look at that. Look at that, he says. "I've been working for you for years, at least 14 years at this point, if not longer." He says, "I've been working and working and working, and you've received, or you've enjoyed all of the blessings and the benefit and the fruits of my labor. When will I finally be able to provide something for my own household?" He wants to be his own mensch. So Laban says, verse 31, he said, "What shall I give you?" And Jacob said, "You shall give me nothing. If you do this thing for me, I will return, I will pasture your flocks, and I will watch them." Jacob is setting the agenda and he's setting the deal. Here we go, verse 32. This is Jacob saying, "I will pass throughout all your flocks today, removing from there every speckled and spotted kid, and every brown lamb among the sheep, and every spotted and speckled one from among the goats. And this shall be my wages." All right, let's continue. "And my righteousness will testify for me at a future date, for it will come upon my wages before you. Whatever is not speckled or spotted among the goats or brown among the sheep shall be counted as stolen with me." Okay, huh? Oh, basically, here we go. Basically, what he's saying is that they took away all of the speckled, spotted, colorful animals. They took out all the animals that had some sort of color. Right? And they removed them from Jacob's flock. Right? And then the deal is that these animals will give birth and have other animals, and only the newly born speckled, spotted kids or sheep, or sheep or goats, those will be the ones that belong to Jacob. In other words, they took out all the spotted ones, and any new spotted ones that are born, that will be his. So again, remove every speckled and spotted kid. In other words, let me start with zero. Only with, I guess, pure white animals, right? And then he says, my righteous will testify for me at a future date. In other words, it's like the proof is in the pudding. There's no steal, there's no theft, there's no room for error over here. Whatever is not speckled or spotted is stolen. In other words, whatever is white still, it does not belong to me. Only the speckled or spotted. But you're going to take all the speckled or spotted, but any newly born speckled or spotted, that will be mine. Laban said, now that sounds like a good deal for Laban, right? I mean, basically Jacob is taking away all the colored animals and saying any new colored animals are mine, but he's stacking the deck against himself. So Laban says, very well, if only it will be as you say. In other words, fantastic, I'll take this deal. You're like putting a deal against yourself. So Laban removed on that day the ringed and the spotted male goats and the speckled and spotted female goats, whichever had white on it, and all the brown from among the sheep, and he gave them into the hands of his son. So he took out all of the anything that had any color to it, he took out from amongst the flock. And he set 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob tended Laban's remaining animals, the ones that were not spotted, ringed, speckled, brown, etc. All right, here we go. Now what happens next? 37. And Jacob took himself moist rods of trembling poplar. That is poplar that's very afraid. I'm kidding. I don't know what trembling poplar is, but I guess it's a type of tree or wood. So he took himself moist, or tree. He took himself moist rods of trembling poplar and hazelnut and chestnut, and he peeled, these are not chestnuts roasting on an open fire. This is Jacob taking the trembling poplar, hazelnut, and chestnut, and he peeled white streaks upon them, bearing the white that was on the rod. So imagine this. Imagine this for a moment. Imagine you have a stick that is not totally dried out. It's still a little bit moist because it's been recently cut off. The branch has been cut off from the tree. So imagine if you could peel the bark a little bit, these certain types of woods, you could peel the bark to kind of reveal the white behind the dark bark. Does that make sense? Yes? Okay. So he's creating streaks, like rings, on these rods. Picture a barber shop. Yeah, with the swirly swirl. So he's making the swirl by peeling the bark. And he thrust the rods, let's go, 38. And he thrust the rods that he had peeled into the gutters in the watering troughs where the animals would come to drink, opposite the other animals. So basically, he set up these rods near where the animals would congregate to drink, the watering troughs. And they would come into heat when they came to drink. And the flocks came into heat by the rods. You know, animals hanging around by the watering trough. One thing leads to another, I'm just saying. So now they're, whatever, it is what it is, right? So it's like a bar. So they're there by the watering trough and they see the rods, right? And then the animals bore ringed, spotted, and striped young. They looked at the striped sticks while they were, what's a nice way of saying this? While they were, you know, repopulating or whatever, right? I don't know, some euphemism like that, yeah? So they were looking at these striped rods, and then the offspring that they had were also striped. Brilliant, ringed, spotted, and striped. So he started off with only pure white animals, but he did this rod system thing, which then led to ringed, spotted, and striped young. And Jacob separated the sheep, and he turned the faces of the animals toward the ringed ones. And every brown one among Laban's animals, and he made himself flocks by himself. And he did not place them with Laban's animals. So now these striped or brown or whatever, these colored animals were now his and not Laban's. And it came to pass that whenever the animals that were bearing their first would come into heat, Jacob would place the rods in the troughs before the eyes of the animals in order to bring them into heat by means of the rods. Sounds like the rods were also bringing them into heat and causing the ringed, spotted, and speckled and brown animals to be born. Those, my friends, were some magical rods. But if the animals would delay, so you know, the early animals, the robust animals, he would place the rods. But if the animals would delay, the schleppers, yeah, that's, I don't know how to translate schleppers, you know, effectively into English, but the schlepper animals, he would not place the rods. You know why? Because he didn't want any schlepper animals. So that the ones that delayed, the schleppers, belonged to Laban. And the ones that bore there first, in other words, the ones that were go-getters, became Jacob's. Okay, listen, it sounds like a very complex scheme here, but either way, Jacob starts off with nothing colored, speckled, striped animals, and through his rod system, he's got flocks and flocks of the speckled, striped, ringed animals, and only the good ones. He was not just, you know, not just any animal that wants, you know, go ahead, you know, take a look at the rod. No, he was very discerning who would get the rod. Not everyone gets the rod. You're out. No rod for you. All right. So, 43. What's the bottom line after all of this, this entire story? And the man Jacob became exceedingly wealthy. And he had prolific animals. Prolific here is prolific in quantity. Tzon, I think, tzon rabos means many. He had a lot of animals and maidservants and manservants and camels and donkeys. All the things that meant wealth and success back then, maybe even today, I don't know. I don't know if wealth is defined by camels and donkeys and maidservants and manservants, whatever. But back in the day, this was a mark of wealth. He was wealthy. Understand, if you recall a few days ago, I told you that Jacob, unlike Eliezer, when Jacob was looking for a wife, when he was traveling, he had nothing. Either he came with nothing or he was robbed by his nephew who wanted to kill him, and he said, take my money instead of killing me. I mentioned that a few days ago. So either way, he had nothing. And then he was working for his father-in-law for 7 years for nothing, just for a wife. And then another 7 years for nothing, just for a wife. And then he was working, but he was having children. And again, all of the profit essentially went, with the exception of just a little bit of his own, went primarily to his uncle. So now they have a deal. They create space. He has his own situation going on, and now he's exceedingly wealthy. Now, take a look at what happens. You know what happens with success? Success breeds what happens. What does success cause? Jealousy. Chapter 31. And he heard the words of Laban's son saying, these are his cousins and brothers-in-law, mind you. And they were saying, Jacob has taken all that belonged to our father. And from what belonged to our father, he has amassed his entire fortune. In other words, he was saying, they were saying about him that Jacob stole everything. He's a ganef, he's a thief. And Jacob saw Laban's countenance, that it was not disposed to him toward him as it had been yesterday and the day before. In other words, Laban now was unhappy about Jacob's success. And the Lord said to Jacob, you know, I guess Laban didn't expect that Jacob would be that successful. After all, he pulled out all the ringed and spotted speckled animals. How well could he do? Well, he didn't know about the rods. Whatever. No one said you couldn't use the rods. I'm just saying, I look back at the deal. No one said you couldn't put the rods by the watering troughs in the original deal. Just saying. So he became very successful. He used, you know, he used whatever methods were at his disposal. And that's it. And now his brothers-in-law are jealous. Laban is jealous. So God says to Jacob, return to the land of your forefathers and to your birthplace, and I will be with you. It's time to go home. It's been 20 years. It's time to go home. So Jacob sent and called. Who did he call? His wives. Hey, listen, God says to go home. You would think he should just, you know, go home. No. Calls his wives, Rachel and Leah. Notice the order there, right? Rachel and then Leah. He called them to the field. Kind of like This way it's not bugged. The house might have been bugged. They're in the field now. They can have a private conversation. Verse 5, and he said to them, I see your father's countenance, that he is not disposed toward me as he was yesterday and the day before. In other words, I could tell there's some friction now, there's some tension here in the relationship, but the God of my father was with me. And you know that with all my might I served your father. But your father mocked me, and he changed my wages 10 times. Now this fills in a piece of the story that the commentators, including Rashi, point out. What it means over here is what Jacob is saying, that your father mocked me and changed my wages 10 times, actually means that during this time of the story with the rods, Laban, when he saw that the animals were being born to Jacob with the spotted or speckled or ringed, he kept on changing the deal. Only the spotted, only the ringed, only the speckled, only the brown, only the this, only the that. He changed the deal tens of times. But God, nonetheless, did not permit him to harm me. And I've been successful despite the attempts of your father to stop me. By the way, this wasn't stated in the narrative, but now we see Jacob expressing it to his wives. So we know that this happened as part of the story. That Laban was trying to change the deal, or change the deal again and again and again. And it still worked out for Jacob. And it's specified right here in verse 8. If he would say, speckled one shall be your wages, specifically speckled, then all the animals would bear speckled ones. And if you would say, ringed ones shall be your wages, all the animals would bear, you guessed it, the ringed ones. Thus, he says, forget the sticks. God himself separated your father's livestock and gave it to me. It was God's blessing, God's desire, that I should amass all of this stuff, ultimately starting from your father's livestock. And it came to pass at the time the animals came into heat, that I lifted, this is him still speaking to his wives, that I lifted my eyes and saw in a dream. And behold, the he-goats that mounted the animals were ringed, speckled, and striped. What a dream. And an angel of God said to me in a dream, Jacob, and I said, here I am. And he said, the angel of God said, now lift your eyes and see that all the he-goats mounting the animals are ringed, speckled, and striped, for I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel. Ah, you remember Bethel. Remember, that's where he slept 20 years prior on the way out of Israel. That's where he slept and had the dream. He put the rocks around his head. He had the dream of the ladder going up with the angels going up and down. Yeah, I am that God of Bethel who you anointed a monument. Remember the stone turned monument? Where you pronounced to me a vow. I remember your vow. If I protect you, if this, that, the other, then now, he says, arise and go forth from this land and return to the land of your birth. Basically, the Torah reported several verses ago, verse 3, that God told Jacob to go home. But now Jacob is reporting this to his wives and getting buy-in. That's important. That's important. It's important that the family is on board with this. All right. Now, after this whole narrative that Jacob is reporting, so what's the response? And Rachel and Leah replied to him and said, do we even still have a share or an inheritance in our father's house? What do we lose? We don't have anything anyway. You think you've been cut off. We've been cut off. Are we not considered by him, our own father, as strangers? For he sold us. Wow. Look at that. All these years later, 20 years later, they're like, do you remember how we got married? How you worked for us? He essentially, our father, sold us to you and also consumed our money. Yeah, Laban is kind of not liked right now by his family. I'm just saying, be an awkward time to break out the turkey and celebrate Thanksgiving with everybody. All right, 16. But all the wealth that God separated from our father is ours and our children. So now all that God said to you, do. Essentially, again, I'm going to say this for the third time. He went to his wives to get their input. This is what's happened over the last, 20 years. This is the story. This is what God told me. What do you think? And they said, 100%, we agree with everything that you said. Not only did our father try to, mess around with you financially, he sold us and he also took our money. Anything that we had, he took. So let's go. They're ready to go. Everyone's on the same page here. That's the point. Let's go to the dramatic sixth reading.
I have a question.
Yeah, Donna, go ahead.
So why didn't we know when it was all happening with the sisters that the father orchestrated it, that they were unhappy or thought there was something untoward that...
Yeah. It's a good question. It's an excellent question. But sometimes you have to read the whole story to find out how the characters were feeling at the time. I guess it's not... I don't have a good answer why it's only shared later. But I'll tell you this, we also have the same thing when it comes to the deal that we just read about. When the deal happens, it seems like Jacob is just, you know, being successful. Later on, he says at the end of that term, when he speaks to his wives, he says, you remember how your father in the last several years kept on changing the deal? Well, we didn't read about that before. But in retrospect, we're reading. The same thing is with them saying in retrospect, they're not saying in retrospect, but they're... For us, in retrospect, they're saying how, you know, we haven't been happy for a while with our father. So, no problem. I'm not answering your question. I'm repeating your point, and let's state it as a statement. The Torah, sometimes you have to read the whole story to get all the pieces. I guess it's also true in throughout the five books. Like, for example, the book of Deuteronomy fills in some of the missing pieces of the stories. As Moses is retelling the story at the end of his life, you're like, oh, that's like an extra detail we didn't have when we read it, you know, the first time as it was happening. So I guess I'm sure there's significance, but at least on a literary level, it's kind of interesting that you don't know everything until, like, whoa, I didn't know that. Cool. All right, it's kind of nice. All right, so chapter 31, verse 17. So Jacob wants to go, Rachel wants to go, Leah wants to go. So Jacob rose, and he lifted up his sons and his wives upon the camels. Remember, he's got a lot of camels, he's got a lot of stuff. So they start heading. Oh, one more thing. You remember that they had set, mutually agreed upon, a 3 days distance between the two flocks, between the two camps. Laban's, you know, dwelling situation and Jacob's, they put a distance so that it could never be said that there were animals being stolen overnight from one to the other, because it was far away from each other. So at this point, they don't call, they don't text, they don't write, they don't Pony Express, garnish, nothing. They just pick up and head out. Jacob rose, put his sons and his wives upon the camels, and he's out. And he led all his livestock and all his possessions, he didn't leave anything behind, that he had acquired, the purchase of his acquisition, which he had acquired in Padan Aram, to come to Isaac, his father, to the land of Canaan. Basically, he took all his stuff and headed home. 20 years later. Now, so what happens in the meantime? Now, Laban had gone to shear his sheep. And meanwhile, Rachel somehow headed over to where her father was, and Rachel stole, verse 19, her father's teraphim. Now, you're probably wondering what teraphim are. Teraphim are not truffles. That's something else. Teraphim are idols. It's a form of idols that they had then. So what happened was that Rachel, give me a moment, that Rachel stole her father's idols. Why? According to the commentary, she was leaving. She wanted to have a final influence on her father in a positive way and take away his means to serving idols. She wanted him to be a monotheist like she was. So she stole her father's idols. And Jacob concealed from Laban the Aramean by not telling him that he was fleeing. Right? So he did keep that. He didn't tell him that he's leaving. He just left. And Rachel, in the meantime, stole her father's idols. So Jacob and all that were his fled, and he arose and crossed the river, and he directed his face toward Mount Gilead. On the third day, because it was a 3 days distance between the two, right? Remember that? On the third day, Laban was informed that Jacob had fled. Ho, 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 ho. So he took his kinsmen with him, his sons. And he pursued him 7 days' journey, and he overtook him at Mount Gilead. Understand this. Jacob is traveling with wives and little children and cattle and livestock and camels and possessions and wealth. A whole entourage. They were traveling fairly slow. Laban probably goes on like the fastest animals that he has, maybe horseback, that's how I picture it at least, or whatever they had, the fastest animals to catch up and to catch up with Jacob. And they did. In 7 days, they caught up to him. And God came to Laban the Aramean in a dream of the night. This is before he actually confronted him. So God comes to Laban and he said to him, beware, just be careful. I know you caught up to him, but be careful, lest you speak with Jacob either good or evil. In other words, do not say anything that you're going to regret, because you will regret it. And that's evil. Even good. He doesn't need your blessings, and you better not curse. And Laban overtook Jacob. All right, so Laban got the warning. Now, the story continues. Laban overtook Jacob, and Jacob pitched his tent on the mountain, and Laban pitched with his kinsmen at Mount Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, here we have now the final confrontation. What have you done that you concealed from me? Ah, deception. And, right, the theme with Jacob. What have you done that you concealed from me and led away my daughters like prisoners of war? Look at that. Look at that. He says, he accuses Jacob of essentially ripping away his own family, Laban's own family, own daughters. You stole my daughters like prisoners of war. Middle of the night. 27. Why have you secretly fled and concealed from me and not told me? Now he claims, I would have sent you away with joy and with songs and with drum and with harp. Ah, it would have been a wonderful farewell. But you didn't tell me, you just ran away. That's not cool. And you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Hey, that means his grandchildren. Now you have acted foolishly. I have the power to inflict harm upon you, says Laban to his son-in-law. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, beware of speaking with Jacob, either good or bad. But now you have gone away, for you long for your father's house. But why have you stolen my gods? What a long preamble. But look, he's saying, I don't appreciate that you ran away. I don't appreciate that you just took my daughters and my grandchildren and didn't say goodbye and didn't give me a chance to say goodbye. And I could harm you, but God told me not to harm you, so I won't. And you want to go home, and I get that. But one thing, why'd you take my idols? You see this like very emotional monologue. Jacob replied, verse 31, and he said to Laban, because I was afraid. Why did I run away in the middle of the night? Why didn't I tell you? Because I was afraid. Because I said, lest you steal your daughters from me. If I told you that I was going and taking the family, what would you have done? He says, I was afraid that you're gonna kidnap your own daughters and take them away from me. The one with whom you find your... Now he addresses the second issue, which is who took the idols? Or why'd you take my idols? Jacob says, I didn't take your idols. In fact, the one who with whom you do find your gods shall not live. In other words, none of us took your... He didn't know. He didn't know that Rachel stole the idols. But he said, whoever stole your idols shall not live. With this, by the way, he basically cursed and doomed unwittingly Rachel. In the presence of our brothers, recognize for yourself what it is with me and take it for yourself. In other words, you can do a search right now. You can do a search. Check us up and down. You will not find your idols. He was convinced that no one took the idols. As the Torah says, for Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. So Laban commences the search. Laban entered Jacob's tent and Leah's tent and the tents of the two handmaids, but he did not find them. And he had come out of... And he had come out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. But Rachel had taken the truffim from her tent and placed them into the camel saddle and sat up upon them. So Laban felt about the entire tent, but he did not find them. And she said to her father, let my lord not be annoyed, for I cannot rise before you, for the way of women is upon me. She says, I can't get up from the camel right now. Yeah, so my apologies, but that's it. Meanwhile, under her, the saddle, I guess, had a bit of a, I don't know. I'm not, I'm not a camel rider or driver or whatever. But I guess the saddle had space to hide idols. She stuck them in there, and she didn't get up, and she apologized. You know, I can't get up right now, etc. So he searched everywhere else, but he did not find the teraphim. Didn't find the idols. And now Jacob was annoyed because he thought he was right. See, no one took them. And he quarreled with Laban. And he said to Laban, "What is my transgression? What is my sin that you pursued me?" Another false accusation. Unbelievable. "For you have felt about all my things. Why'd you search everything? What have you found of all the utensils of your house? Put it here in the presence of my kinsmen and your kinsmen, and let them decide between the two of us." Wow. "If you found anything that I took from you, put it right here. Put it right here. Nothing. Already 20 years," Jacob continues, "already 20 years I've been with you. And your ewes and your she-goats have not aborted, neither have I eaten the rams of your flocks. I've not brought home to you anything torn by other animals." In other words, none of your animals were ever killed by predators. "I would suffer its loss." In other words, if it did get a loss, I would reimburse you. "From my hand you would demand it, what was stolen by day and what was stolen at night. I was in the field by day when the heat consumed me, and the frost at night, and my sleep wandered from my eyes. This is now 20 years that I've spent in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your animals, and you changed my wages." Again, the same idea, the same item. "You changed my wages 10 times. Rashi says it means more than 10, tens of times, 100 times. "Had not the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac been with me, been for me, you would now have sent me away empty-handed." In other words, had you had your way, you would have swindled me out of everything. "But God has seen my affliction and the toil of my hands, and he reproved you last night." Wow. What a conversation on both sides. Laban says, feigning heartbreak. I don't know. Maybe he was also heartbroken. I'm not sure. It's hard to say. It was family after all. I mean, was he just a total monster? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But he says, you took your family. You took your kid. You took the family. You took my daughters. You took my grandchildren. I didn't say goodbye. Nothing this, nothing that. How dare you? And you stole my idols. And Jacob says, search. They searched. They didn't find anything. You see, we didn't take anything. We didn't touch anything. You've been the problem all these years. You're the one that's caused problems. You're the one that's made my life miserable. And if it was up to... Hey, Reeves. And if it was up to you, I would have nothing. But thanks to God, I have something. All right, we're almost done. The finale of the story is reading number 7. And then I think we'll do a quick insight and then close it out. Here we go. Reba, say hi. There you go. Let's see your face. Hey, yo. All right. Genesis chapter 31, verse 43. "And Laban answered and said to Jacob..." Remember, Jacob just said to him, "You were trying to leave me empty-handed, if not for God." So Laban answers and said to Jacob, this is his final pitch, his final explosion. "The daughters are my daughters, and the sons are my sons. And the animals are my animals. And all that you see is mine." After 20 years, he says, "Everything is mine." By the way, if you're Jacob, you're like, exactly. I knew it. That's how you felt the whole time. But understand Laban also, if we're being honest, we're being fair, Jacob came into his house empty-handed, with nothing, a single guy. And everything that he has, the family, right, the wives, the children, the animals, it's all a product of being with Laban. So again, I'm not trying to justify Laban, but I'm just saying that that's his perspective. I gave you everything. Now, what would I do to these daughters of mine today or to their children whom they have born? What, you think I would have harmed them? You're accusing me that I would have harmed them? This is an intense conversation. This is a real intense conversation. Verse 44. So Laban says, bottom line, so now come, let us form a covenant. Let's make an agreement, you and I, and may he, God, be a witness between me and you. At least Laban is trying to move it forward practically to like next steps. 45, so Jacob took a stone and set it up as a monument, and Jacob said to his kinsmen, gather stones, and they took stones and made a pile. They made like a bit of a mound of stones, and they ate there by the pile. And Laban called it Yegar Sahadusa, which means in Aramaic. It's Aramaic for the wall or the pile shall be a witness. But Jacob called it in Hebrew Gal Eid, which also means may the wall be a witness. And Laban said, or this pile, not Gomer pile. Who was Gomer pile? That was some dude in some show. Years ago, Gomer pile. Wow. All right. And Laban said, this pile is a witness between me and you today. Therefore, he called it Galed. The witness, the pile is a witness. And Mitzpah, he also called it Mitzpah. They used to give things different names because he said, may the Lord look between me and you when we are hidden from each other. And he says, this is what Laban says to Jacob. If you afflict my daughters, or if you take wives in addition to my daughters when no one is with us, behold, God is a witness between me and you. In other words, you dare harm my daughters or take other wives and disrespect my daughters. So listen, he's defending his daughters, which is not a bad thing. But you and I know Jacob. He would never do such a thing. Okay, fine. But Laban is making a declaration. And Laban said, thank you, Reeves. And Laban said to Jacob, behold, this pile, and behold this monument which I have cast between me and you. This pile, 52, is a witness, and the monument is a witness, that I will not pass this pile to go to you, and that you shall not pass this pile and this monument to come to me to do harm. In other words, you know, like when you draw a line in the sand, and you say, let's just, you're over there, and I'm over here, and that's going to be the healthiest way to do this. We don't cross over this line. They took stones and made a wall, made a pile of stones, and that became the symbolic divide, Laban and Jacob. What's interesting is the idea is that you cannot cross it to do harm, but as Rashi points out, based on the commentaries, you could cross it to do business, but not to do harm. Doesn't mean you can't ever go on the other side of the divide. It just means not if your intentions are negative. And then, one second. And then Laban says, again, Laban's doing all the talking. I don't know if you noticed that. Laban says, may the God of Abraham and the God of Nachar judge between us, the God of their father. And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Okay. So Jacob agreed to the deal. And Jacob slaughtered a slaughtering in the mountain, and he invited his friends to eat a meal, and they ate bread and lodged on the mountain. Listen, food always, you know, it's like, oh, very intense. All right, let's eat. All right, we'll pick up the intensity soon. All right, Genesis chapter 32 begins, and I've told you many times that chapter and verse is not aligned with necessarily with Jewish tradition. That's why you have the beginning of a new chapter, three verses before the end of a Torah portion. Whatever. It's, again, a different system of division. So, chapter 32, verse 1, and Laban arose early in the morning. So they made the deal. The next morning, Laban arose early in the morning, and he finally had his chance. He kissed his sons and his daughters. I mean, his grandsons and his daughters, and blessed them. And Laban went and returned to his place. And Jacob went on his way. And once again, the angels of God met him. Remember at the beginning of the Torah portion, we read about how the angels were going up and down the ladder, and Mark pointed out, based on Rashi, that it was the angels of Israel that were leaving and the new diaspora angels coming down to escort him. Did you learn about this?
Yeah.
The angels? One second.
He was dreaming about the angels going up the ladder.
That's right. But do you know why the angels were going up the ladder?
No.
Okay, angels going up the ladder because those were the Israel angels of protection, and they were leaving. They were going back up to Shemayim, to heaven, because Jacob, was leaving Israel. And then new angels came. Well, guess what? Now he's headed back to Israel. Guess who meets him? Who meets him? Israeli angels. Hebrew-speaking angels. I'm kidding. The Israel angels are meeting him now to escort him back into Israel. So Jacob went on his way, and angels of God met him. And Jacob said when he saw them, "Oh, this is the camp of God." And he named that place Machanaim, which means the camp of God. By the way, first of all, the story itself is just so rich. You know, I don't know that I have to do like a ton of insights or whatever, and also time, but I'll mention one thing. If you recall, the Israeli angels had to leave before he crossed the border, because the Israeli angels cannot meet someone in the diaspora. But here, the Israeli angels are meeting him before he enters the land of Israel. Are you with me in the question? You understand my question? Before, as Jacob is leaving Israel, the angels have to leave and the new angels have to join him on the way out. But here on the way in, before he enters, before he steps foot back into Israel, the Israeli angels are meeting him on the outside. How suddenly, 20 years later, are the angels allowed to go in the diaspora? The Rebbe answers, the Rebbe explains something so beautiful. He said, before, Jacob had only experienced like Torah study and that sort of spiritual service, that insular service. So it was holy, but only holy in a box. But now that Jacob had been living with Laban for 20 years, he had seen it all, and he had to apply his spiritual truths to a very complicated situation in the world, and he had transformed his environment on some level to a holier place. At that point, he was able to welcome the angels even in the diaspora, because the diaspora, through his efforts, was that your braid? It's beautiful. We're going to show everybody in a second. Okay, because the diaspora was lifted up and purified. And thus, 20 years later, after he had made a difference in the diaspora, in Haran, the angels were able to meet him outside of Israel. So that's the idea. Again, 20 years prior, Israel was holy, out of Israel was not holy. 20 years later, Jacob had made an imprint, had made an impact in a positive way on the outside world, so to speak, and thus the angels were able to step foot even outside of Israel, even the holy Israel angels, because he made even that space also somewhat holy, so they were able to feel comfortable there. I feel like I want to share with you one other insight to close it out. What is it? I was thinking about it before. What is it, Riva? Do you remember? Do you remember? No, it's okay. No, I'm kidding. I didn't tell it to you. So what was the other insight? The other insight was, let me just look back to jog my memory. Ba-da-ba-dum-bum-bum. Ba-da-ba-dum-bum-bum. All right, I can't remember. Yes.
So we were talking earlier in the week, how is it that Jacob, from him came the 12 tribes?
Yes.
So while you were discussing how, you know, he ended up making such a great business decision. So,
right.
You know, the Jews, so we come from him, so the Jews are very good at business.
Exactly. You know, the way we read the story in the inside is that Jacob was the one kind of pulling the strings. But when Jacob's reporting back to his wives and even to Laban in that final confrontation conversation, he talks about how Laban tried to trick him tens of times, which indicates that it wasn't as simple as, you know, he peeled some rods and he profited. There was it was working both ways, and he was responding to the treachery, at least the way we're going to look at it, right? Because it's our mishpacha, so we're going to definitely look at it in the best light, is that he was responding to the treachery of his father-in-law. So, but what's interesting is that we see again that Jacob is mired in deception. There's deception everywhere. He can't get away from deception. He's born holding on to his brother's, you know, heel, trying to be first. He buys the blessings for, you know, a bunch of beans for some lentil soup. He then takes the blessings. He then runs away and with Laban. He lives a very interesting life, a very, very complicated life. And I think...
That also goes back to one of your coffee in Kabbalah when you said, what's truth? And what? Well, how do we know what's truth?
Right. Right. Yeah, what is truth? You have to have an objective definition of truth. Otherwise, it's too subjective to be meaningful. So when it comes to Jacob, that's why of all the patriarchs, Jacob is the most relatable. His children even more relatable, right? Because like as you go down, it becomes even more, you know, connectable. But, you know, Jacob is the most relatable. Abraham was like, you know, just a giant. And Isaac was a pure offering who never left Israel. Jacob, we can relate, you know, he's got family issues, he has to escape sometimes, he has to get out of Dodge, he's dealing with, you know, it's complicated, but that's kind of like the way life is.
Rabbi.
Yeah, Ray.
Two things, you might have discussed it, I think I missed one class. When Jacob, one of the maidens that was given to him, was pregnant with the seventh child. She was hoping that it wouldn't be a boy, and she prayed and prayed, and therefore Dina came around.
Yes, that was Leah, exactly. Because had she had number seven, then Rachel would not have had two boys, and she would have less than the maidservants. Yeah. And I believe that the insight that we took away from that is that you can pray for the gender of a child, you know, up until a certain amount of time, and it can be effective. Otherwise, it's considered to be a tefillah levatala, a prayer for nothing. That's what it says.
Oh, and is it true that I never heard it, that Leah and Rachel were twins?
I don't know. I haven't heard that.
I haven't either.
Did you hear that somewhere?
Yesterday, yes.
After all these years, we discovered they're twins? Where has this information been? Now, hold on one second. Just because I haven't heard it doesn't mean it's not true. You know? But it's interesting. I would love to see the source. Whatever. I'm not challenging. I'm asking. It's a very interesting idea. I guess either way. Oh, it's on Chabad.org?
Chabad.org, maybe.
I've heard of that site. All right. We should probably check it out.
Anyway.
Interesting. All right, now you've planted some good seeds for thought. All right, so as we close out today, what's a good takeaway message? Good takeaway message is that even when we're by a Laban, even when we're by not Laban, not chocolate Laban, it's something else.
So what's chocolate?
Chocolate Laban? No, Laban, not Laban. So even when we're by a Laban, we have to do what we need to do. As Jacob said, for 20 years, I didn't sleep properly. I was, you know, I stayed up at night watching the flock. He was dedicated to the task, even though it was watching somebody else's animals. That was his job, and he did it faithfully. And if there was a loss, he didn't say, you know, it wasn't my fault. He took responsibility for it. So even on the level of just working, Jacob worked faithfully and he worked honestly. At least, you know, I'm not saying the stick thing wasn't honest. I'm just saying that he worked very faithfully for Laban and the flock. The message for us is that out there in the workforce, we have to be a mensch, do the right thing, and always make a Kiddush Hashem, which means always sanctify the name of Hashem. All right, let's bring light into the world however we can. Thank you for joining me. I hope you enjoyed the Torah portion of Vayetzeh, and the drama continues next week. Trust me, this again, are you tired? It's the morning, early afternoon. So the drama continues. Don't miss this. We got next week, the Torah portion of Vayishlach, where we're going to read about the encounter after 20 years, the reunion of the brothers, the twin brothers, Yaakov and Esav, Jacob and Esau, and the drama that's contained there. All right, have a good Shabbos, everybody. See you. Happy Shabbos, happy Thanksgiving weekend. Riva, say bye. Give a big wave. Shabbat shalom, everybody. Take care.
That was you.